Today, the narrative lectionary takes us to a place, again, I don't know whether we've traveled in an awfully long time, which is to the book of Daniel. It's kind of interesting. The book of Daniel is kind of a unique Bible book within the scriptures, within the Bible. It is one of the ones they had a real debate about whether or not it should be included within the Bible. It was one of the final two that were accepted into the canon of the scriptures. It's also kind of interesting that in the Protestant scriptures, we place Daniel in with the prophets. However, in the Jewish scriptures, he is not placed among the prophets. He is placed among the writings, along with the stories of Esther and of Job. So he's quite a controversial book in terms of how we are supposed to understand the book of Daniel. Part of this is because there's also two very distinct parts to the book of Daniel. There's the first half of the book of Daniel's, which is a narrative history of Daniel and the people who are in the exile in Babylon. And the second half of Daniel then becomes a series of prophecies about the future and about end times. Probably within the Protestant church in America, Daniel is most often studied in terms of his prophecies and how do they fit with eschatology and the end of time. The first part of Daniel is usually ignored other than pulling out particular stories that are good to tell to children. For example, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being thrown into the fiery furnace, or the story we heard today of Daniel being thrown into the lion's den. All of these early stories are stories that were important to the people of Israel because they reflected the fact that even though Israel had gone into captivity in Babylon, they had remained faithful to God. And that's the ultimate narrative of Daniel and his friends. It's the same narrative we also get in the book of Esther, talking about the captivity. These were important stories to the Jewish people because it let them know that even though they had entered into captivity, even though they had lost the promised land for a period of time, many of them had remained faithful to their God. We see this in the book of Daniel throughout. It starts off with Daniel not wanting to eat the food that was being provided to him and asking if he could continue to follow a kosher lifestyle. And he's told, well, we'll let you try it. And it works, and he actually becomes healthier. And so consequently, all of them are put on that diet. It deals with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are set up for their own destruction in the fiery furnace, but yet survive the fiery furnace. It goes through the stories of Daniel as Daniel is able to interpret the dreams of the kings of Babylon and help them to understand what God is saying to them. And then it comes to this story where Daniel is raised to great power within the empire. He's made one of the three top administrators of the entire empire. And the enemies he has made try to bring him down by setting him up for failure. The last thing I want to mention about Daniel in general is actually pretty how amazing it is. In the book of Daniel, they talk about four different rulers that Daniel serves, starting with Babylonians, Chaldeans, Medes, and eventually to an actual Persian emperor, Darius. And in each of these kings' lives, there's a moment where because of the faithfulness of Daniel and his friends, they are forced to acknowledge the righteousness of God, the God of Israel, or as it says in the passage today, the God of Daniel. So what is this specific story about? Well, as I said, the enemies of Daniel are trying to bring him down. They don't like the fact that he has been given so much authority and power within the kingdom. Now, they know that he's a faithful man. They know that he prays to his God each and every day. So they go to the king, and they say to Darius, we want you to do a special law that says that for 30 days, no one in the kingdom can pray to anyone but you. Now notice it's just for a period of 30 days. Darius is not going to set aside all the gods of his empire, but he's convinced that for this one 30-day period, everyone should know their faith, show their faithfulness to him by rejecting their personal gods. So the king makes a decree that declares this. Now, as it says over and over in the passage today, the decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. This is the idea that once one of these kings has spoken, they cannot reverse themselves. You actually get the same conundrum in the book of Esther in terms of promises made by the king. So the king makes this decree not realizing what its intent is. And its intent is to ensnare Daniel. That's why in verse 13 you hear them say, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, and to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day." And this is what they've tried to maneuver. They have used the laws of Darius, they have used the laws of Persia, to maneuver Daniel into a place where he is compromised and his life is put in danger. Now, the fact the king didn't understand what was going on is made absolutely clear. Okay? When the king hears this in verse 14, he was greatly distressed and he was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. I think this is significant, and actually I kind of want to spend most of the rest of the sermon talking primarily about the reaction of Darius. Notice Darius finds himself captured by this human law, ensnared by this human law that he himself has created. It's not what he wants to have happen, but he has been manipulated into a situation where it must happen. It's interesting that this lectionary puts it together with the story of Jesus before Pilate, where you have a very similar situation of what does Pilate want to do with Jesus? He wants to release him, but the crowd insists upon his death. Or else it's similar to the stories in the New Testament of the relationship between King Herod and John the Baptist. It says King Herod loved to visit with John the Baptist, and it's only when he is maneuvered by his wife that he eventually takes the life of John the Baptist. In all these situations, it is interesting that the man of authority within the civil government, the human government, knows what he wants, knows what is right, but is controlled so that he cannot do it. You'd think that the king who had set this rule would be able to break it, but as it says time and time again, he can't. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. I can just see Darius calling together his lawyers. "All right, guys, can we find a loophole in the law? Can we find a loophole in this decree I've made so that we can save this man who is of such great value to me?" But he can't do it. And Daniel's enemies come to him and say, "Remember, your edict must be obeyed." So in verse 16, the king gives the order and throws him into the lion's den. But look at what he says to Daniel there in verse 16. "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. May your God, who you worship, rescue you." Notice what Darius is actually saying here. He's saying, "I'm the emperor, I'm the ruler of this whole region, but the one person who can overrule me is God. God has the power to do what I do not have the power to do. I am constrained by the rules and the regulations of my kingdom, but God can do more than that." And so this king who has condemned Daniel to death, now tells Daniel, I can no longer save you, so put your faith in the one who can save you. And so Daniel is put into the lion's den. The king seals it so that no one can save him. But look at verse 18. Then the king, Darius, returns to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. Not eating, no entertainment. Okay, this is a king who probably has a fantastic dinner every night and entertainment every night to amuse him, and he says, no, I'm not going to do this, in part probably as a thing of mourning. Okay, I am not going to celebrate on the evening that Daniel dies. But yet it is also clear that he has hope. He couldn't sleep. But in verse 19, at the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. Why hurry to the lion's den? By all rights, Daniel should be long gone and devoured. But this shows that Darius has a faith. Darius has a confidence in the God of Daniel. So when he comes near the den, he calls out to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answers, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king. Daniel says, I didn't deserve this to happen to me. And even says to the king, you know I didn't deserve this because I have done nothing wrong to you as well. And Darius is overjoyed. He gives orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. The power of God trumps the power of the king. The will of God trumps the will of the king. God's purposes cannot be set aside by man. Well, what do we draw from this? Well, I love the commentaries I read this week. They said, do not draw the assumption that you can go into a cave of lions and walk out okay. Okay? This is not a prescriptive thing for Christian life. Do not put yourself in danger needlessly. Because there are going to be, as we know many times in history, when Christians are thrown to the lions and the lions do, in fact, devour them. But in this case, it stands as a model for the Jews of Daniel's time of what it means to be faithful. And it stands as a model for us today of what it means to remain faithful to God in whatever circumstances the world throws at us. Can we remain as faithful as Daniel? Or do we let the rules and the powers of this world trump the rules and the powers of God? That's the most basic lesson. That's the lesson we teach kids about Daniel in the lion's den. Be faithful, and God will be with you, and God will save you. But I think the bigger message for us is, like I said, what happened with Darius. Darius realizes the injustice of the human law. But he also realizes that human law is subject to something greater, to the law of God. And so, while he cannot save David, he puts his confidence in the ability of God to save his servant. And he is overjoyed when the servant is saved. Now the king also responds in another way, one that's not nearly so nice. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. We don't know how many of these people there were, but these people are devoured instantly. Okay? Which goes to show that what happened to Daniel was, in fact, miraculous. It wasn't just lions who weren't hungry. It wasn't just a pack of friendly lions down there. It was a group of man-eaters, killers, and this is shown in the story. But look at what King Darius writes at the end. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language throughout the land. And think about this. Darius would have ruled an area that would have encompassed everything from the borders of Egypt up through the Middle East into what we would think of as modern Turkey, all the way across what we think of as Syria, Iraq, and Iran, and maybe even to the borders of Afghanistan, one of the largest empires in the world at this point. And he issues a decree to all of them that they must fear and reverence the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. Just think of this. The king of the Persians, the conquerors of Israel, says that all of the people of his kingdom must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. Now, this is probably not a unique thing in the sense of you must only worship the God of Daniel. He's probably basically adding the God of Daniel to the pantheon of other gods that the Persians have. And of course, historically, we don't have any record of this actually happening. We don't see a time when the kingdom of Persia suddenly starts worshiping Yahweh and so forth. And so some people question the reality of this part of the story. But it's interesting. Whether it happened or whether it didn't happen, the message is valid. Look at what King Darius says. This is how he describes Yahweh. He is a living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. What a true statement about the power of God. And this was an important message for the people of Daniel's time to hear, because they were in the midst of this captivity. They were in the midst of their world being turned upside down. And Darius is saying, God is still in control of what's happening. It's an important message for the Jews as they return to Israel, and they are subject to Greek and to Roman power, because they realize that while they are not in control, God is in control. And it is in the fulfillment of this that we have the story of Jesus Christ, who rescues and saves us, and whose dominion will never end. And it is a message for us today as well. On the first Sunday of Advent, we celebrate not the first coming of Jesus Christ, but the second coming of Jesus Christ. That which has not yet happened. But we have confidence that it will. For God is in control over everything. And that's what Darius declared hundreds of years before Jesus came into. That God is in control, and whatever you face in this life, even up to being thrown into a den of lions, you can have confidence in the power and the will of God. We often talk about living in a challenging world or a world that hates Christians. That's certainly the world of Daniel. But what was Daniel? He was faithful. And even more than Daniel being faithful, God was faithful. And we need to remember now and always that in whatever circumstances we find ourselves, our God is faithful, and in the end, he will triumph, and his kingdom will endure forever and ever. Amen.